Thanks to Stack Overflow for supporting Does Not Compute. I'm sure most of you already know and love Stack Overflow, but you might not know that they just released Stack Overflow for Teams. It's your team's very own private Stack Overflow, a secure home for all of your team's questions and answers. Stack Overflow for Teams lets you leverage all the power of Stack Overflow to make stale wikis and deep dives through email archives a thing of the past. All your team knowledge will be indexed and searchable. And of course, they make it simple to export your data at any time or connect it with your favorite tools like Slack via a simple API. Team members will also get internal recognition for helping others with Stack Overflow's great reputation system. Learn more about Stack Overflow for Teams and sign up for a free trial at s.tk/doesnotcompute. Stack Overflow for Teams gives your team everything they already know and love about Stack Overflow in a secure, private environment. Check it out and sign up for a free 14-day trial today at s.tk/doesnotcompute. This is unusual. This is the second time in 120-ish episodes.
28-ish, 26, 27, something
some
like
number
that.
Some large number of episodes that we've ever been in the same room recording.
Yeah. It feels weird not having headphones on. And it feels weird not looking at my monitor.
I'm sitting sideways. I can't even really see my laptop right now. It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because I think a lot of people assume that we record, you know, in the same room. Because, like, when I'll meet up with people or whatever who listen to the show, and they'll always be like, oh, so how are you and Sean recording now that you're on the road? Or, like, something like that always comes up. And it's like, nope, we've only been in the same room once before this.
And I think we had, I think John Gold was on the show.
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you think of Vermont?
I like Vermont. I like it a lot. We've been traveling through all the South, and I don't do well with the humidity or the heat, which there's both in abundance down there. So it's really nice to be back somewhere with a little more mountainous, it feels a little bit more like California. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I think we've gotten lucky the past week. There hasn't been any humidity. So it was humid. It went straight from being cold to being humid. And then it went from humid to a bunch of storms. And I think after those storms, the humidity went away. So it's been pretty, feels like Santa Cruz actually today outside.
No, it does. It's so crisp. It's just like, it definitely feels like California, which is a weird thing to say, but that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. And it's like been, the bloom has happened too. So there's lots of pollen now.
Yeah. Not kidding.
The bee trees are back. That's what I call them. They're like purple. I don't actually know what kind of tree they are, but like you look at it and it looks like, you know, Pigpen from Charlie Brown. He had like a cloud of stink around him. It's a cloud of bees around these trees, and it freaks me out because I used to be allergic to bees, so I don't like to walk around those trees much.
Wait, you used to be allergic to bees? You're no longer, or you just haven't been stung in some time?
Well, two things. So my parents will probably hear this and then fill me in on the correct details, but when I was younger, I was allergic to honeybees. So for example, one time I got stung on the foot and my eye swelled shut and my foot like expanded. It was,
oh God,
I couldn't put a shoe on. And so there was a treatment. I should probably Google this or something, but there was a treatment where once a month they gave me a shot, and I'm pretty sure it was like some sort of solution that had the venom that I was allergic to. And so they would give me micro doses of it, and each month they would get a little bit stronger.
Interesting. I had no idea there was even a vaccination. I mean, it sounds just like a vaccination to me. I didn't even know that was a thing for bees.
Yeah, it took a while. Allergy shots. Yeah, it's called venom immunotherapy, according to WebMD.
Well, it must be true then.
Yeah, but usually about 3 to 6 months. So you get a shot. And you get them once or twice a week. Cause I remember when I first started it, it was like once a week. And then after a while, for a longer period of time, it was just once a month. And several times I actually had a reaction. So most of the time I didn't, but several times it was like the next level up dosage caused me to have a reaction. So I remember having to sit at the hospital while it chilled out, calmed down. So I haven't been stung. It was specifically honeybees actually that I was allergic to. And I haven't been stung by a honeybee in a long time. So I don't really remember.
Well, have you been stung since you had this done, do you know?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Because I stay away from those trees.
right. Yeah, you got the fear drilled into you too hard.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, I used to run around barefoot, and there used to be, in Minnesota, there was a lot of clovers, like white clover leaves, little flowers in our grass, like all over the place, and that's where the bees would hang out, so I would like step on them, and that's how I got stung, and I'd stop doing that.
Yeah, it's effective. I mean, the one bee dies to sting you, but you remember it for your whole life.
Yeah, and I haven't really seen many honeybees around here, because again, I don't like... Oh, there's a bunch of dandelions. Let me go over by them. But I have, it's actually the window that's right behind you. I have a bunch of cloth, like microfiber cloth, shoved in the top of it. It's like a two pane, so the bottom pane lines up. And if I open the window, yellow jackets, I'm pretty sure they're yellow jackets. There's like a hive somewhere close. And so they just come into my house.
Yellow jackets are the worst, man. Those things scare me.
Yeah, they just come in because they can sting you and go about their business. So I'm always having to, shoo them out, or like I grab them with a microfiber cloth and put them outside, and they just keep coming in. So yeah, I've tried to bee proof my place because I don't have an EpiPen.
You have all sorts of little animals right around your apartment. There's that bird just outside the back window, and then right outside your front, just a nest.
I feel like I'm never truly alone because whenever I look out the window, there's an animal looking in at me.
Do you have other animals around here?
Squirrels live in the trees out, like the living room. There's two big windows, and so I always see like a squirrel, like eye level. I don't know why. I'm on the second floor, so I'm just eye level with these animals that live not on the ground. So either I will see people in the cemetery behind those trees playing with their dogs, which is also weird. I think we mentioned that at one point. Or I will see a squirrel napping on a branch, or the squirrel's looking at me because I'm moving around. And now there's a bird that built its nest like directly outside my window, eye level. And so this morning I was sitting on the couch drinking coffee, and I just looked at the window, and it was one of those weird situations where you look somewhere and then you happen to be looking at something else's eyeballs. So it was like we looked at each other at the same time, but it was just a bird sitting in its nest. And outside my door, I live on the second floor, so there's stairs and like a little railing, and a bird decided it was a good idea to build its nest on top of the railing against the wall. So there's just a bird's nest.
And when you walk up the stairs, you're walking like 3 feet away from this nest.
Yeah,
it's right there.
And yeah, so when you came in, because I went outside this morning, I don't think they had hatched yet. Maybe it happened recently. Maybe I didn't really think about looking either, though. And yeah, so the birds just hatched. So this bird is just sitting in this nest with some baby birds in it.
Yeah, just a couple naked little birds sitting in that nest.
Yeah.
Squirming around. Baby birds are weird.
They do look strange. Yeah. They look like they should be in a pouch somewhere, like a marsupial. I'm trying to think what else. You tried jiu-jitsu for the first time yesterday, too.
I did. Yes, that was very cool. I was able to try that out, see a little bit what it's all about. You're always talking about it.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was very interesting. I hadn't done anything even remotely close to that in years and years. I did a little bit of karate for, I don't know, probably a year, maybe even a little less than that. When I was, I don't know, 8 or 9, something like that. And that was really fun. I enjoyed that a lot. And it's something I've remembered fondly. So it was cool to get to try something new and just, you know, see what that's all about. And I don't know. I liked it, man.
Yeah. Like you were saying yesterday, it's not every, like you just don't like go and lay on somebody. Like being that close, it's like rib cage to rib cage. It's like about as close as you can get to a person. And you've never met these people. I mean, you trained with me a little bit yesterday, but also trained with sensei of the show, Nick. So no, it was cool. It was cool to like, I think you were the first person I've ever brought with me to class, besides Jamie, obviously, but she was trains too. Yeah, it was fun. I think like it was also interesting because I knew that sensei knew that you were coming. So I think he wanted to give you sort of a sampling of the different positions and the different techniques. So usually how a class works, for everyone who's not aware, is we'll get together, we'll stretch. Yesterday we did some yoga, which was actually very much needed. And then Sensei will demonstrate usually no more than two techniques. I've noticed it's like two techniques, and yesterday it was four.
Yeah, it was a lot to remember. Like I was expecting, you know, one or two things. It's like, here, you move in this way, and then you do this grapple, and, you know, whatever. It's,
yeah,
I was expecting something simple, but that was like a whole series.
Oh yeah, it was the three major positions. There were four things that he taught, but it was like the three major positions. So the standing was a pretty important position, and then there was the side, four positions, I guess. So there was standing, there was side control, and then there was the closed guard, and then there was the mount. So there was like the four major positions, and from each one there's a million combinations of possibilities. But he was cool because he put together like a pretty fluid drill, so you can just kind of like transition from one to the next. And then like, here's what you do first if you're in that position, like for example punch blocks, or I guess punch block is like half of it. And then also checking the knee, I think, was the other one, especially in side control, side mount rather. But yeah, it was interesting because it was quite a bit.
Yeah, and I don't think I definitely didn't fully grasp all of it, but I started to get a sort of a sense for what the movements were, and it was very cool, very interesting. I enjoyed it. Dane will be happy to hear that. I think the weirdest part for me was, like you said, just going in and just like actually just laying down on top of somebody. That's like not something you ever really do in day-to-day life. Yeah, or at least, yeah, not something I ever really do in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And like to just lay on top of somebody. It makes sense though, because you do have, it gives you a ridiculous amount of power and leverage in the situation and control.
Yeah.
And so like, I get it, but it's a weird thing to wrap your head around at first.
Yeah. Especially if someone hasn't trained, like you said, it's very strange, but we were talking about it. So we went out for some Indian food last night. It was with Sensei of the show, Sensei Nick. And we were talking about UFC 1 and kind of like how it became popular, and like where, not like where jiu-jitsu started, but like where it became kind of mainstream in the US with like UFC 1, and how it was one of the first major competitions where it was like, wasn't like no holds barred, but there weren't really many rules for it. And so it would be like a kickboxer versus Hoist. Yeah, kickboxer versus Hoist Gracie. And Hoist just pretty much starched everyone, because as soon as he would dodge the punches, and as soon as he got too close for them to strike, they didn't know what to do. So there was one where he took this guy down, and Hoist took this guy down, and he just tapped right away because he didn't know what to do.
I can see that, because that was really weird. I mean, I guess that ties into like literally laying on somebody, but it's like I would assume that would be very unexpected in most fights. Like, you don't expect the person to try to get closer to you, generally
speaking. Right. Yeah. 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 So that's what I thought was cool, because it was part of the standing thing where he taught you how to block a drunk punch, or like a telegraphed punch coming from the side. And then from there, being able to take them down and holding them in a position or something. So yeah, it's fun. And then, I mean, yesterday I had to train with a pretty strong guy, so I was just tired, but it was much needed. The yoga, I think, compared with just the exertion, I think was really good way to end the week for me.
Yeah, I needed that yoga. My neck is still messed up, but it's been messed up all week, and that always helps. I need to do yoga more often. It's so important. It's really hard to make yourself get out of the chair sometimes and just stretch or do these basic things.
Yeah. It's funny, because I used to have all these back pain, and my back would be sore, my back would ache all the time. And I noticed that, like, Jimmy would mention that too. When she started law school, she went from being active, we went from living in California where it was a lot easier to just like go, not that you can't go running or ride a bike here, but it's just less accessible. Like, there's no sidewalks here.
Well, and especially the big chunk of the year is very cold and,
it's very cold
and wet.
And the other chunk of the year is hot and there's mosquitoes. So, except for this week, rather. But she noticed kind of the same thing, like similar symptoms. And really it's like the sitting and the not moving, and it's like your legs kind of seize up. And it's really interesting, because I noticed that if I don't stretch on my own, like I can stretch in jiu-jitsu, but that helps me when I'm kind of there and warming up. But if I don't stretch on my own, my tendons, my legs get so tight. Like they it's almost like they lose elasticity in a way, right?
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
But yeah, speaking of being more flexible, I did some Docker things this week.
Yeah, over the last couple of weeks, we've kind of, I feel like, gotten to, not a breaking point, but like, we really need to solve this. We really need to figure out our hosting situation. So, I mean, we can't say we're on Heroku right now. And basically, that's not working out super well. We've talked about this briefly on the show before, but it's not working out great. And it's just we gotta move off to something that is going to really allow us to use all of the cool tech that Elixir, OTP, that all the stuff that is there that we get if we can actually move to an ecosystem that supports it. So we've been actually doing the work. You've mostly been doing this, and we've been researching these companies and just kind of figuring out what's next. And that led us to eventually saying, it seems like Dockerizing everything might not be the worst idea.
I think you and I both have kind of had the similar feelings about Docker, because I've used it in the past, and I don't know maybe the tooling has gotten better. Like this was back when Docker Machine was a thing. So if you're not familiar, if you're running a Mac, you had to install Docker Machine, and what that would do is allow you to communicate with the VM because you're not on Linux, and so you'd have to use some sort of VM. And so there were all these caveats where you had to eval a bunch of variables, so that way sometimes you would lose the IP address of the machine and things would just stop working. So then you had to find it again and you had to reset it in your environment variables, which was really frustrating because it was one of those combo breaker things. And so there was always just something small that I had to figure out. But lately, again, like I just started messing with it. Maybe 6 months ago, I started using Kitematic, but I wasn't like Dockerizing things. I would use Docker to install PG and then like Postgres. And so all of my apps would connect to that instance of Postgres. So I was using it like a brew service or like a third party, like hosted kind of thing. I just had an IP address and I connected to it. And that worked fine. And then I started doing it with Redis too. And that's kind of what I started doing because it was easy to start them and stop them, add new versions if I wanted to test out different versions of it. It just worked well. And then so maybe that kind of disarmed my propensity to not want to use it. And yeah, so in thinking about like flexibility, like Heroku is great in most regards, but it was kind of like forcing us to do things in a non-OTP way, a non-Elixir way. So for example,
just the fact that we have Redis.
Exactly.
On Heroku, like we ideally wouldn't even need Redis.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Redis, like by itself, Redis isn't bad, but there's other tools that we could use that wouldn't include an external dependency like Redis. But with Heroku, we could probably use it, but then it's not really safe because Heroku reboots the dynos whenever, like at least once a day. So then we can't really rely on anything in memory because it gets wiped every single day. And there's other things too. So like making like using a libcluster, you can't really do it on Heroku. And making instances talk to each other the way that OTP wants them to doesn't seem very straightforward if it's even feasible. The last time I looked into it, people were like, well, it's probably not the best option if you're going to try and do that on Heroku. Granted, we could just build microservices to do this, but that's another reason why I chose Elixir, because I didn't want to have to do that. So it makes sense. Like Docker is kind of ubiquitous, right? It's if you're on Docker, it seems like you could spin up AWS and toss it on there. You could spin up DigitalOcean and toss it on there. You could buy a physical server if you wanted to do that and toss it on that, you know? So the interface is the same, I think, is what I'm trying to get at. The interface for most things with Docker is the same. And so that's what was tempting for me, is having that interface that's the same. It solves a lot of problems for me because I'm not a DevOps expert.
Yeah. And kind of for me, I guess I feel like, at least it seems as though Docker has gotten more to the point where you don't have to be as much of a DevOps expert to use it effectively. And I think that's sort of been an issue for me in the past, is like it was just a lot of stuff to learn. And it seems like there is that surface area for getting started with it has been pretty drastically reduced.
Yeah. So, yeah, I took a couple of days and I made a Docker file for the web side of things with it's just Phoenix. I'm actually using, so I did it a few times, a few different ways. One was just using Alpine Linux. And so Alpine is just a build of Linux that's super slim. It's built specifically for that purpose. So it just has only the dependency that it needs. And so I kind of built things out my way and then it worked okay. And then I found out that Bitwalker, that's the GitHub handle. And I found out that Gitwalker has an Alpine Elixir build and an Alpine Elixir Phoenix build. So I just used that. So literally the web Docker file is 15 lines long, including several comments that I left for myself.
I just watched you pull that file up, but it's ridiculously short.
Yeah. The only thing I'm doing on my own is installing PostgreSQL client and Yarn and exposing port 4000. That's it. And so it was super easy for me to do that. And the Docker compose file obviously is really simple. It's just a YAML file. And so I'm just saying, hey, here's how you build the web. And we're also using Redis and Postgres. So after all the reading, because I took several hours and I read a bunch of docs and I watched some videos and I just Googled, like, how do other people do this? How does networking work? All that stuff.
How to Docker.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the first time that I booted it up, it just worked, which was kind of cool. I'd never really, that's very, not often that happens to me where it just kind of works the first time.
Yeah, I was really impressed because we were chatting while you were working on this stuff, and it, basically everything you said every time, it was just like, oh yeah, that thing went better than I was expecting it to.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was actually pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the most intimidating thing for me was volumes. Like, for whatever reason, and this is funny because you and I talked about, like, when we were talking about moving hosts, the thing that I'm the most paranoid about is losing the database. Not that it's like not hard to do. It would be kind of hard to do that.
Right. But it is like the brain of Design Collective. It's all of the stuff, all of its memories.
Yeah.
It's what makes Design Collective what it is. It holds all of the information about the products and all the orders. And like, that's a lot of person hours that have been put into building that.
Yes.
Artifact.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the first thing I did before anything was I made a new bare note and I just typed into my Safari book club thing. I keep calling it book club. I think it's Safari Books Online. Yeah, so I just typed Docker into that and turned, there's like 15 books. So I just started looking up Docker volumes. And once I kind of made myself feel better about Docker volumes, it's actually pretty simple how it works. It was easy to move forward from that. So it's literally as easy as just specifying a volume in the driver. So if it's like local or file system or whatever, and that's it. So the actual database files, all of the Postgres files themselves are just sitting on my hard drive, which makes me feel really good about that. And then importing the database is also super easy. And the whole reason why I installed Postgres client onto the web image or the web container is so that way I can boot into the web and do a PG restore. Now, if I wanted to do that on the DB side, I guess I could too, but it was just easier for me. And also, it basically is exactly how it works currently with our Heroku setup. So the README for the Docker stuff and importing a database dump didn't change at all. I think the host is the only thing that changed.
Well, I think that's really important. Like, in doing a switch like this, an architecture change, it is keeping as many things as you can the same for the initial switch, even if that setup isn't ideal for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
and you want to make it better or different in the future, like really sectioning it off and doing only what's absolutely necessary for the host switch first.
Yeah, yeah. And I made sure all the environment variables mapped over. I made sure all that stuff maps over. So it's pretty seamless. And then I just wrote a Docker README that the setup is 5 steps. One of those steps is installing Docker. One of those steps is importing the database. So it's very, very, very simple. And I'm pretty happy with how things are going so far. So, I mean, there's a lot to figure out in terms of deployment and what we actually want to go with. I mean, we've looked at Docker. We've looked at a couple of companies that kind of automate Kubernetes for you. Not even like really automating it. They basically have a process that allows you to deploy stuff and they kind of augment Docker. So you deploy with Docker, but they make certain things easier, like scaling, for example.
It's a KaaS, Kubernetes as a service.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So we've been looking at Kubernetes, which we can talk about that later because I don't know enough to actually intelligently speak on it.
Yeah, it's probably a next week thing.
But we're just looking at our options. And like how I talked to Lindsay about it, I was just like, hey, containerization is pretty, it's like how, granted there are outliers, you know, there are people that don't like containers and that's fine. I was one of those people until recently, but it's like pretty ubiquitous in terms of your options. And I think that's what was most interesting to me was in adopting this, it makes us much more flexible and it makes us more the master of our domain. So we can choose how we need to function. We can choose how we scale and we can choose how we build up our infrastructure. And we don't have to build around a certain pattern to work with Heroku. I think that was the main motivation. So I described that to her and she was like, sounds great. So
yeah, I think that's so important. Just being able to make more of our own decisions that now and in the future is going to be really critical. One of my, not like a near-term goal or anything, but one of my long-term goals for Design Collective is, like we've talked about, getting everything onto our own hardware, like not being on shared hardware, not being on VPS hardware. Mm-hmm. And that, a lot of that is driven for me, but just by all the stuff lately with Spectre, and there've been, basically it seems like things aren't going to be getting better in that department over the next few years. There are more and more attack vectors, and as more abstractions get added, as there are more layers of VMs and different crazy things going on at the processor architecture level that are way beyond my understanding, honestly.
Yeah.
There's just so much of that stuff, and there's obviously going to be more of that, more uncertainty, more attack vectors in the future. And so I am just more and more hesitant to deploy like big stuff.
Sure, yeah.
On shared hardware.
Yeah.
And that also comes with a lot of costs too. I mean, both in the sense that it is more generally more expensive to host your own, to have your own hardware. But I think more importantly to my mind that it is a bigger investment of time and energy. It is something that you then have to worry about. You have to keep it secure. You have to make sure that you're doing all the best practices, that you're keeping up to date with that stuff. And that is a big thing, or at least it can be a big thing. And so it's, everything's just a balance.
Yeah, it's a balance for sure. But I mean, it seems like in adopting Docker, containerization, Kubernetes, whatever we end up with, I think that we're actually more balanced than we currently are, because we're not, it feels weird to say being vendor locked by Heroku, but we kind of are in a sense, because that's where everything lives and you can't really move it unless you were to go to another Heroku-like thing, but then it's the same situation, right? But I'm not trying to like rush things, not trying to hurry stuff. It's just felt like the right time to think about it, I guess.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that we've been talking about this for months before I even started at Design Collective. Like,
yeah.
this has been such a long-term thing, and it's just getting to the point where it needs to start pushing that boulder so it gets rolling.
Yeah, and it feels good too, because I feel like I can actually start thinking about this stuff without you doing lots of heavy lifting on the product side. Gives me a lot of free time. Well, I don't have any free time, but it gives me more time to think about things like this, which I think is more lines of what my job title actually is trying to figure out, should we stay with Heroku, should we stay or should we go, kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it feels good. I guess like the only thing that I might want to mention about Docker is if you're not on Linux, because I do a lot of development on Ubuntu. But if you're on Mac, there can be some file system things, and it's really only a speed issue. So there's not, I haven't noticed any like bugs aside from volumes, mounted volumes being slow. But it seems like there have been some really big strides to make it better, and especially the one thing that I did that made performance almost match things natively running on my Mac was to use the cache tag for the volume, and I can put that in show notes. But I think before, what would happen is I would push save, and it would take maybe a second or two for it to bubble through the volume and actually get saved to disk. And then once the server saw that there was a new file, it would reload. So really, the app execution wasn't slower. I'm still getting sub 100 millisecond responses from my dev server. It was just that when I saved, it took a second, two or three, to bubble through the whole system.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was just like the file system, as if it were a networked computer far away.
Yeah.
And it took a while for the data to get to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. But using the cache tag on the volume, it works fine. I haven't had any issues. And I think there's also a new image type called RAW, which you can enable if you install the Edge version of Docker. But with the cache tag, I haven't needed to do that.
Interesting. Well, I'm excited to actually try this out. I've only looked at the code in GitHub. I haven't actually run it on my computer yet, so that'll be a good test for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, it'll be good because I have it working, and there's other things too. So I haven't even considered building the Docker file for deployment. So, for example, I'm not copying like Node. I'm not copying dependencies and stuff over. So that web's file, the web file itself, should probably install dependencies. So basically how I had it set up is my web file is super short because I have a shell file with things that run like yarn install and creates a database. If it hasn't been created, and it runs migrations and stuff. So every time you do web up, it runs through that and handles all that stuff. So I don't know what the best way to do all that stuff is. So if there's any Docker fans that listen to this, please help me.
Please set up.
Yeah, I'm shooting. That's me shooting a flare into the air.
This episode of Does Not Compute was sponsored by Stack Overflow for Teams. Instead of your team's knowledge rotting in wikis, getting lost in chat messages, or sitting in email archives, power it up with Stack Overflow for Teams. Take a look at s.tk/doesnotcompute to learn more and sign up for your free 14-day trial. You'll get the power of Stack Overflow, like searching, tagging, data export, API tools, and reputation, all in a secure, private environment just for your team. Check out s.tk/doesnotcompute today.